Anyway, what I want to do is I'm going to talk to you today about a new tool. It was released last week. It was a soft release, we will call it, called a Transportation Health Tool. I'll say a harder release was today. It came out in a press release from USDOT. And a super hard release will be next Monday. There's going to be a webinar on it. And I'll show you at least how to find the webinar as we get into this. So what I'm going to do is give you a little background on the tool, and then I want to get into it a little bit on how it was developed, but then I want to show it to you. It's not just vaporware at this point. It actually really exists. First thing is, you see these slides, people have the disclaimer slides. I don't have anything to disclaim other than I work for Federal Highway Administration, and I was part of the team that worked on developing this tool. It started 3 years ago, so we're almost sarcastically excited, saying, "Gee, it's finally out." It was supposed to be done about a year ago, and when you're dealing with two big federal agencies, getting things, even though at the staff level we work very well, just getting the sign-offs and things through the different review processes and all of that. It was a learning experience for me, but it also was kind of a nightmare too. Things just took longer. You came into this a little bit at the end, and so you missed a lot of the 6 months to review a memo. Anyway, I wanted to leave these slides in. Some of my slides, I use them because I talk to transportation planners a lot about health and things that are going on. So I want to just put this a little bit in context as to, one of the big questions I always get is why public health and transportation? And we're kind of over this hump of trying to justify why there's this connection that we keep talking about. But on the transportation side, and this applies to regional and state departments of transportation and local agencies as well, local transportation planning agencies, but we're basically stewards of the transportation system, and that's how we market ourselves, as stewards of it. And the transportation system, and this is the hump I think that we're pretty much over now, and that's that the transportation system can promote healthy lifestyles. I'll say 4 or 5 years ago, this was still a big issue on the table for us, trying to make that case. And I think we're doing a much better job of doing it. So to me, I call it Aristotelian logic. If A equals B and B equals C, you would think A and C somehow are related. And that's, I've kind of boiled it down to that. One of the things, though, that I have fun with is this slide. And I've been living in this confluence of these two disciplines, public health and transportation, for about 3 years now, and the languages are totally different between them, and we have different speak, and it's sometimes we're talking like this past each other, even though we're still trying to accomplish the same thing. But when I say when you say health, transportation, people, these are kind of the areas that resonate with people, where I can say there's a real solid health connection. Certainly air pollution, safety always comes up, water quality, climate change, and we're going to hear from climate change earlier today. Environmental justice, that's the EJ up there. That's the social sides of things, and heard a lot about that in this conference. And one of the things I've added down there is the spread of disease. At our upper management levels, it's kind of interesting. You bring the decision makers in that are not familiar with health and transportation in this broader context that we're talking about, and you say transportation and health, the first thing they flash to is the spread of infectious disease. And I've had an example of that this year. I do a lot with the Transportation Research Board. That's part of the National Academy of Sciences. National Academy of Sciences, you've got Institute of Medicine over here. Another silo is the Transportation Research Board. It's big. Their conferences, 13,000 people like this. It's where the academics go and get published. Well, their executive committee meets for their annual meeting is every January in D.C. And their executive committee has a two-day meeting. They spend 5 hours during one of their meetings each year focusing on a single topic. They call it the red meat session. Red meat. That means it's like throwing it to the lions. This year, the red meat session is health. So it's huge for us. And it's huge for my subcommittee that, we're resonating at that level. But when it resonated at that level, one of the things they came back with for one of their agenda items was spread of infectious disease. And it's like, boy, we got to get them the right message that, yeah, that's important, but that's really not what we're trying to talk about so much. And then on the health side, you guys probably, you know, I see more MPH badges around here. You guys probably can say those definitions in your sleep. I always joke and say, we think in dot points, and the health people think in long, full sentences. So another difference between us. Anyway, the transportation health tool, it was developed with funding from CDC and USDOT, and the American Public Health Association played this kind of middle role as a broker between the different consultants working on it and putting it together and the bringing the forms together to develop the actual indicators that are in the tool. So they played, APHA played a real center role in this. Like anything, it started out with some goals. Basically, and I get asked now when people are seeing this tool roll out, well, how can I use it and what should I be doing with it? It's really just to raise the awareness between the links between transportation and health. We're one of the big things that was one of the bigger goals of this, and really to start to get the discussion going between these two disciplines, you know, and support the collaboration, but really get that process started. And, you know, so these are kind of lofty goals, and, you know, it had its design goals too. And, you know, a lot of these are pretty standard things. Make it easy to use. It was going to be online, you know, push button thing. But one of the big things was, besides coming up with indicators of health and transportation in this tool, list of indicators, it was also going to have strategies so that if you scored low on one of the indicators, what strategies might move the needle on that indicator. And that was a little tough one, and I'm going to show you the list of indicators, and it's all the stuff we would all think about doing that just make good planning sense, but just being able to have them in a tool that's supported by CDC and DOT listed, I think that's really powerful to give us some things to point to. It went through, I don't know, you would kind of call this a typical development process. Let's bring in a lot of people, let's throw the room open, let's brainstorm and come up with, you know, what might be a good indicator. And, you know, the first formal list was, I don't know, roughly around 190, but there were really over 300 indicators that started out at the top. And, you know, as you start boiling down this list and you bring together peer groups, just talk about them, discuss them, and then towards the end, you bring in some of us folks who are more close to the data that say, hold it, wait, you can't get the data for that, you can't get the data for this, you're not going to find it at this geography, and the reality sets in. So we, you know, you go through this boiling down process, and it comes out with 14. Not a whole heck of a lot, but it took a lot to get there. And one of the things that I always say is, now that we got this, we can build from it, you'll see in a minute. So this was just, you know, we had, again, meetings, and, you know, we did the normal boiling down and collected recommendations and tried to split things in topic areas, talked about scoring, and just talked about all the basic issues that would be involved with it. But at the end of the day, came out with 14 indicators that were really clustered around transportation, health, and then some policy indicators. And I'm going to walk through some of these individually. In these next couple of slides. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but what I'm trying to show here is what the indicator is and where the data came from. That's really important. And at the geographic level that it is. MSA is the Metropolitan Statistical Area. And in some circles, I have to tell you what a MSA is. They're bigger than regions. The MSA in this region would be Chicago, it pulls in Gary, and it spreads out really big. And then urbanized area is a region defined by the Census Bureau. It starts out with population density and are areas of 50,000 population or more. So these things come at different geographies, and again, it's based on what was the data available to geography. We also at one point wanted to get this thing down to something called cities, but the data, you can't always get the data across the board for just cities. And I've had questions from a few folks as I've been talking about this, well, how can I use this in my city? And I think what you can do is you can a lot of these variables, you can go find them for your city. You got to make some assumptions on, you know, geographies and things. But you can also get richer stuff sometimes within your city to add to the list too. But anyway, commute mode share, that's just people who commute to work using American Community Survey census data by driving, transit, walking, bike, the modes that you would find in the census data, VMT, vehicle miles per capita, proximity to major roadways, kind of an interesting variable. It's basically how many people live within it, 200 meters, I think that's, I don't know, 600 feet, I might have that wrong, next to a major roadway. When we were developing the indicators, we had this question on a table of, what's a major roadway? How big is a roadway to be considered major? And we came up with the idea that it should carry 25,000 vehicles a day. In the transportation speak, we call that annual average daily traffic. And, you know, we got networks and we got ways to get at that traffic count. But as we were working on the development of the metric, we ran into a little situation inside my agency where our air quality people said, wait a minute, 25,000 is too low of a volume of use rate that should be higher. And then they wanted to turn it into an argument and said, you know, you're trying to link this to air pollution, and air pollution depends on the prevailing winds, and there's all these other reasons. And I just started to turn this into this huge argument. And the CDC folks could fight it, but didn't want to push it. You know, we didn't want to dig in over this because we could have lost the whole metric. And we basically said, okay, what if we raise it to 125,000 vehicles a day? And everybody seemed happy on the DOT side, the folks that were objecting to it anyway. And we at least kept it as a metric. So I'm kind of throwing that out there. The research question that's still on the table, believe it or not, is do major roadways have an impact on your health? And many of us are convinced that they do. And then what's the traffic volume for it to have that impact? And then what's the distance from the roadway where you have to live? Which really becomes a true research question, which feeds into my task force at the Transportation Research Board. Some of the other indicators in here, you can see that the thing I want to point out is the data is coming from a lot of different places, but they're all national data sets where the data is available. We use the Environmental Protection Agency, Smart Location Database. American Public Transit Association has data. We're pulling some of their data into this. The 2009 Household Travel Survey, that's a survey that Federal Highway does, not on a fixed schedule. The last one was done in 2009, and we're gearing up to do another one. If you talk to the NHTS people, they will tell you that the survey is going to be out in the field in 2016. I think if you're a betting person, you would say probably 2017 will be the next time they'll be in the field. They're going through an internal review process in DOT right now. So these variables are coming from different national data sets that are available to everybody, and that was one of the restrictions. Fatal accident reporting system. So, you know, you can jump along. And some of the policy indicators were kind of interesting. Seatbelt use, we actually measure seatbelt use at a state level. And there's surveys that are done to say, do people wear a seatbelt or not? So that's in here. Complete streets is another one of these policy indicators. Do you have a complete street policy? Complete streets are, hey, we're going to think about more than just the traffic on the roadway. We're going to think about everything next to the roadway. We're going to think about pedestrian facilities, bike facilities. It's more that holistic view of the street scene. But that's a yes or no variable. So when I get to show you the actual indicator, you're either going to get a score of 100 on it or a score of 0 if you have a complete street policy or not. The tool itself. You go to the website. Here's the link. And if I got time, I'm going to pull it up to show you. But we've got these banners on the side. Talk about the background. The indicators themselves, and then we got these things called profiles, and let me just run through and show you what these are real quick. Background, of course, is why do we have the tool, what's it about, just you know, how is it built, some of the real basic things. For the indicator profiles, this is a thing I still use a lot going back and forth to, because it tells me where did I get the data, what's the indicator all about, And this thing is rich with resources and links and references. Wow, okay. Told too many stories, I told you that. Strategies, there's a whole list of strategies here. And again, for each strategy, you get all this information, a description of it, examples of where the strategy was used. One thing neat about these strategies is you can click, you know, this is in a hot screen, but if you clicked on any one of these, we'll say graduated driver licensing systems, those actually have a health implication. When you click on it, it tells you what indicator it links back to where you might move the needle on an indicator. And then the scoring. The big thing about the scoring is the scoring, everything has been adjusted, so it ranks from 0 to 100, and it's basically a percentile. So for a specific geography, you are ranked against all your other states. You're showed against all your states, and what's your percentile versus the other states. And a couple of the metrics have been adjusted to the point so that a big number is always good and a low number is always bad. For example, I always use travel time. If you say the travel time in this region went from 28 minutes to 32, that's somewhat considered a bad thing, but it did increase, but you can flip it around. So, you know, travel times, people like faster travel times and slower. So the point is bigger numbers. I wanted to show you this on geography because this shows you the 14 indicators and at what geographic level you can get them at. You can't get all the indicators at the urbanized area level. They just do not exist. So this gives you that general breakdown. When you go to the tool, you click on indicator data. This is like any data search engine that you work with nowadays. You click on, I've got an example of Indiana. You would click on Indiana, then you click on beauty indicators. Up the top, you get the three boxes if you were going to click on MSA or urbanized area. I'm trying to hype people and say submit feedback as you work with this. If you find glitches or bugs or something with it, it's a quick form, send it in. And in the bureaucracy, I think that's sometimes the only way we can make change happen is let them know. This is what the sheet looks like when you get it. And you actually scroll down. This is for Indiana. And if you just look at the top one, it gives you the raw score. So it's telling me 92.1. That's actually the percent of people in Indiana commute to work by auto. And it's a score of 20, which is somewhat low. Means like a high percentage of people commuting to work. So they're 20th percentile. Not really good. So you would scroll down it and you'd see all the indicators. You can roll over each indicator and it tells you where the data came from really quick. So you can, you know, if you didn't remember from the six screens behind. And you can click on each indicator too, and it does open up a tab too that takes you backwards to the indicator itself. But then you're clicking back and forth. So you can scroll down all these, and by the time you get to the bottom, you forgot what you saw at the top. So what I did is I pulled out all the indicators for Indiana, put them all on one page, and I said to myself, okay, if I'm over 50, I'm probably not bad. If I'm under 50, I'm going to call that bad, make my own judgment on it. So I just highlighted the ones where I was red. So you know, if I were a planner at the state of Indiana, I could take that stuff back and say, oh man, look at, I score low on a lot of stuff. Are there any of these things where I think I can have a policy to affect some of these indicators? And that's basically really what you get out of this. And I did the same thing to show you the MSA, where there's less variables. And again, the MSA, it happened to be Muncie, because I was demoing this in Muncie. They scored better on a lot of things. But they were still low, but not real low on everything. And ironically, they do have a complete streets program policy in place. But they put it in place after we grabbed the database and it got in here. So that's something to be aware of, which is why you go back to the indicator profile to see where the data came from and what year it is. Not only did the city, but or the urbanized area, and you only get two variables. One of the things I want to point out, if you were clicking back and trying to look at, say, the metropolitan statistical area, it's a normal view. Oh, and you got to zoom out more to get Alaska and Hawaii. That just doesn't all fit on one page. And you get these dots with circles on them with numbers, and that'll tell you how many MSAs there are. If you look around the Chicago region, you can see a 9 and a 10 and a 4. That tells you how many MSAs are hidden under that dot. You can either zoom in to get to the MSA, or you can click on that dot and get the whole list of the MSAs hidden under that dot. You click on Chicago, and poof, I got Chicago, and you get a map saying hey, guy, you pick Chicago, and then all its indicators. Again, it's the link, and I say, tell me if you've used it.
And can you tell them about the one features?
The which?
The one features in the
back. The one feature. Oh, yeah. The URL that we've been splashed around. We got a handout in the back that has the URL on it, so you don't have to remember this long URL. And I'm going to sneak a minute here to show one other thing that I think is super, super cool. And you can see that we have a tool and it works, so it's not vaporware. We always ask for surveys. So I go to the data. I said, do I pull this out of the data or the profiles? No, the data. I just found this last night, by the way. So this thing got released last week, and they keep updating. And, you know, yesterday I demoed this, and I couldn't get the MSA stuff to work. I think they were between uploading a new version of it or fixing something. But this link here that says download a spreadsheet with the complete data set, from being at this conference, I know that there's people who are really technically analytical. And this is, where did it go? Oh, yeah. So you go here, and it'll give you the whole thing in a spreadsheet, and I'm just showing this because it is not a big spreadsheet. This happens to be all the urbanized areas, and you know, you can scroll up it and down. And one question you're showing you, it shows you what the variables are, so you get the whole database, and you can click across the tabs at the bottom, and it's not that big of a data set if you want to process it yourself. Like I showed you that one table that had all the indicators for my area. This means you can start to sort all of the states together on a particular variable. I think this is to me, as an analyst, where the power really lies. But one of the things, when I looked at this last night, I'm asking myself, okay, why is there no data for all these urbanized areas up here? And I should have known that, just given that I work with census data all the time. But I went back to the indicator description, and it said, oh, this was from 2012, one-year ACS data. Now, I'm not teaching my census class, so I'm not testing you as to why that triggered something in my head, but one-year ACS data is only available for areas over 65,000. And so these areas are over 50,000, but not over 65, so that's why there was no data for them. So again, you got to kind of know what's behind it a little bit. But I had to show this download part.
Cool. Does anyone have any questions for Ed before we go on to the next?
We're all going to go home and try it, right? Can't wait. Here, go ahead.
You were.
Well, that wouldn't go. Don't twist me that far in advance. This was coming out of the transportation TRB executive committee, which is. But again, I think in general. I mean, I would say this. Our secretary gets it.
Okay, so then maybe it's not as big a deal. But do you think that this tool might help the people who are making decisions to understand?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And that's for me personally, that's been one of the things, is trying to get the real message out that we're not taught. And a lot of people in transportation, you say health, and they flash to safety. And they say, oh, we're doing a lot already. We're all concerned about safety. Or they'll flash to active transportation. Oh, we got all these bike and ped programs. And what I keep trying to say, each time somebody says something like that to me, I say, no, it's not all about just that. And I'm trying to present this more holistic view. So, but don't implicate me saying that the head of DOT said blah, blah, blah.
And I
want
to jump
I only got 59 days left, and I want to make them peaceful.
I want to jump onto that to say, like I mentioned, every single indicator profile does show the relationship between transportation and health. And then if you explore the tool more and you go under the literature resources, you'll see that when the group got together, they use five primary pathways of how transportation affects health. So it really is a larger picture that you can see when you explore the PhD.
Go ahead, okay. The performance measures that we keep talking about that are in Math 21, if I can use internal jargon?
Yeah.
Those performance metrics. Our latest transportation bill that expired, 2 years ago already, had performance measures in it that the state DOTs have to come up with and then they pass them to the regional planning agencies, and they agree on them, and they become fixed. And we're writing, and as the feds, we're putting out the regulations relative to those, and we keep waiting for the regulations to come out. I haven't seen them or worked on the regulations, but my sense is that they're going to be kind of all the top-level, higher-level stuff that we've got data on now that you can just grab. And I'm sure there's going to be traffic fatalities in there, because that FARS data set is rich and it's something that's been collected. But some of these other ones, things like complete streets, that would be a stretch. But regional planning agencies are gravitating towards some of these more robust measures that cover a lot more. But I'm going to speculate on the regs that are going to come out and say it's probably going to just grab the real high level, easy off the shelf stuff at first. I'm done. Yeah. Two policy questions? No, please don't make it a policy question. No, go ahead. Well, for this metric, because it's urbanized area, and urbanized areas have to be over 50,000, but the American Community Survey that the Census Bureau does, which is the replacement of the long form that gives you all the details, income, mode to work, travel time, all that stuff, they release it in two phases now. They release it annually for areas over 65,000 population. And if you want to get to all that little detail variable for small geographies down to even block group level, you've got to wait for a 5-year accumulation. It comes out every year, but it's a 5-year accumulation. But for this, they grabbed a 1-year, and I can give you a good reason and argument for why they did that. So that's why there's no data that would show up here.
Well, let's find out. So, because this is at the very beginning when they first started those conversations, and like Ed mentioned, it took a couple of years to do that. And we have a whole two different booklets that say the background of how those indicators were made that we'll put up on the APHA website so that you can read about why those specific indicators were chosen, why those strategies were chosen. But let's see here. These are the 5 pathways that I mentioned, and then once you click on there, you can learn more about what exactly was considered. So I would just say explore it. And if, I know I'm not answering your question completely, but if you have more questions about it, you can definitely contact Ed or myself, and we'll find the answer for you.
Okay. I was going to say, what 5 pathways?
Come on, I just said that yesterday.
Okay, going. I'll still be here if you want to take a shot at me later, but go easy with the policy questions.
Okay.